meeting of the Law Enforcement Public Safety February 2nd to order. A motion to approve the December 8th meeting minutes. Okay, second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, so moved. Let it be noted that Legislator Hansett has entered the room.
Hewitt.
Oh my God. Sorry. I like first names. Okay, let's start with resolution number 6, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 to allow enrolled volunteer firefighters and volunteer ambulance workers to be eligible for real property tax exemption. A motion to discuss?
Do it.
Second?
Second.
Okay, discussion? Anyone? Go ahead.
I'll just
let's
add, this is a great thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, I anything that we can do to support our volunteer firefighters and ambulance workers, like even if it's small stuff like this, it feels like something more dramatic needs to happen if we're really gonna to change the situation.
And
there,
the other thing too,
hopefully
it'll attract more younger people to get involved. A lot of fire departments are struggling getting membership, so this might be something that might bring them in. They get a little something out of it. So that's the way I look at it.
Currently, we do offer the exemption for who? Yeah.
So we do have a law on the books that is an exemption, but it's a very small based off the percentages. So basically what this is, 466A requires you to conform to the new state law. So you'll be rolling back this current law that we have on the books. You'd be conforming to and you'd be adopting 466A.
Which is what the state law is already
saying. The new state law, so which would be a higher percentage. So I think it comes out to like $1,200 on a $250,000 assessed value house. So that's a big jump for a volunteer firefighter. But there's every HJ needs to adopt it. So school districts, county government, town government, fire districts, if they're their own taxing district. They have to adopt it. So just the county adopting it doesn't mean that everybody else did adopt it.
Thank you. And then what are the steps happening to sort of inform the local municipalities?
So FASNY, the Fire Association of the State of New York, has been pushing out information to all the local fire departments, and they've been pushing it out to their respective taxing districts within their area. I have had conversations with some school districts that have reached out, but I think it's also good if the legislature reaches out as well.
Do you have a running list of who's already, or should we start working on getting that?
I don't have a running list of who's adopted.
Is it something, Chelsea, we can get is figure out who's already adopted it in terms of each town and then each school district?
Yes, it'd be town, school district, fire districts.
Fire district, right.
And then the county.
Because then we could tell the appropriate legislators to do the outreach in their communities.
Yeah. The school districts are going to be the real substantial one to make a give a saving. And now, just because, we'll say, $1,000 that I save on property, on my school taxes, that $1,000 isn't lost at the school district. It's redistributed amongst the residents of that school district.
And sorry, I got just a few more questions. Because this one, you said that basically the county current level was lower than the state. Is there reason to believe that each of these all have something on their books that is lower than the state?
Yes.
Okay.
So not every township has it. No, I don't know of any school districts within our county that have it. But town of Lloyd, I know, has one, but it's a very small savings, and it doesn't allow you to get the tax rebate either, which is a $200 tax credit when you do your taxes in April. So on your income tax. So that's why most firefighters go after a $200 income tax to the state rather than trying to get the tax to the county or the town.
Thank you.
And to that, you cannot receive both the New York State $200 income tax credit and a local property tax exemption.
but there is really no reason why we can't get two separate governments. They can't simultaneously offer both. So I know in the Dutchess County Legislature, they just put something out, and it's something that we're going to hopefully look at going forward. So they did it about a week ago, so I've been reading up on that, and we can see what we can do about that.
That's great. So, I mean, given this conversation, it seems like there's a little bit of education that's needed for us, and if we're going to spread the word, is it possible that you could sort of put together a brief, you know, just something brief that helps us know the language of, like, how much this is, what's the current situation, you know, just anything not that long, don't need to write a novel, but just kind of what we've already covered so that we have that and anything we can add to that so that... Because
yeah,
I think that we're not really
It's easier to do it at the county level. When you start getting down to local jurisdiction, it all depends on what that tax base is.
Right, you don't have to get into that. It's more just that concept that each municipality would need to do
I
it on their own.
I'll do that.
Oh, you will? Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, and then maybe...
Yeah,
I have a PowerPoint.
Yeah, we'll
so.
Work together on
great.
That, and I'll make sure I get it out to everybody.
That's terrific. That's great.
And I'll get the information from Dutchess County as well.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Okay, anything else on Resolution 6? Motion to approve? I mean, not a motion to approve. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, I have Christmas all between me. Any against? Any opposed? Any abstained? Okay, unanimous. Resolution 45, approving a contract amendment for 28-28-761 for the aggregate to be in excess of $50,000 for NDI Technologies with the sheriff. Motion to discuss?
Motion.
Okay, we've got Hampstead Hewitt. Any discussion on this one?
These are cameras.
These are fixed license plate reader cameras.
Got it. Okay. Yep.
That are usually in positions of probably exiting the county, whether it's a controlled access highway like a freeway, or perhaps a bridge, or they're strategically put. Just want to remind everyone that. Expectation of privacy on a public highway, there is none. I mean, we're within the laws to make sure that we don't violate anybody's rights regarding that. We store them in our server at the law enforcement center, and we keep those records for up to 3 years. The only one that has access to it is other law enforcement, and that's it.
Can it be foiled?
The information from it, like how many plates?
The specific people's information.
Right.
Just wondering.
The specific people's license
not
plate?
Specific people, just how many license plate readers we did.
Okay.
That's
so this comes up on a regular basis whenever this gets reviewed, is some concern about people's privacy and how that's being stored and how that's being shared. So... It will probably come up again in some of our caucuses. Okay.
I'll ask another question. Mm-hmm. Is the cameras are, the technology can only be used to read numbers and letters on license plates, is that correct?
That's correct.
So there's no way that the technology could somehow be updated to do facial recognition?
No.
Okay, not with this hardware.
Not without knowledge and then be articulated in the contract if that were to happen. And it would have to be approved for the record. I will not be using, or nor will I be purchasing anything involving facial recognition.
Thank you. I mean, I think also to that point is this idea of not just what you would do as the sheriff, but what another sheriff might be able to do. And so I think that's where we want to know that the protections are in place.
The sheriff would be passed by the legislature, whatever legislature it is. And sometimes if the future sheriff or the future legislature decides to have it, then we have to give the future their opportunity to act.
All right, anything else? Go ahead, legislator.
Can you give some examples of what you would be reading plates for?
Investigations. Let's say, for example, there was a homicide in Allendale, for example, and the vehicle left the area and probably passed one of those license plate readers. We'll be able to know that vehicle, it's only used for the purposes of criminal investigations. If someone is just driving by, there's no reason. And there's a policy in place, and I believe I sent it to the legislature last year, and it's a policy that comes from the Division of Criminal Justice Services on the proper use of license plate readers. So strictly for criminal investigations. You can't use it and be trying to track your girlfriend or family members. That's prohibited and illegal, and you're probably going to get terminated.
Thank you.
Yep. All right. Just remind me that that needs to change. Okay. All in favor of Resolution 45?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? All right. It's unanimous. Resolution number 46? Nope. Yes. Approving a contract for 28290, causing the aggregate to exceed $50,000 for Motorola Solutions for Emergency Management. Motion to discuss. Yushitel, second.
Second.
You beat him. Discussion? Okay. All in favor of Resolution 46?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Unanimous. Resolution number 47, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services for Domestic Terrorism Prevention Grant. Motion to discuss. Okay, second. Yushitel, discussion. This is emergency management. You want to give a little background?
I can speak on anything. I just didn't want to speak
Please do.
Yeah, so after the Buffalo incident, the governor passed an order for us to comply and write a plan to address domestic terrorism at the county level. That plan has been written and provided to New York State. Along with that, the state pushed out to every county 172,000, I believe, and change. For us to implement that plan. We did the work, we applied for the grant, the money is going, we were awarded the grant, so we just need the acceptance from the legislature. We have a couple different projects. We had some meetings where Legislator Uchidel and Legislator Hansett were involved. We have a big group throughout the county, had some very, very good conversation, I thought. Brings a lot of stuff to light, and now we're moving forward with a threat assessment team for the county, and that's the next phase of this, is to implement this threat assessment team.
Thanks. Other comments? So how are the... If at all, are the protections of illegal immigrants sort of compensated or considered in this?
I'm not sure I understand how.
Meaning, are systems in place that assure that individuals who are potentially here undocumented aren't getting caught into a net unexpectedly as a part of the larger plan for responding to domestic terrorism?
So that's not what this is about. This is more to for education, you know, in school districts, in religious facilities, more to educate them on how to address, how to report, and how to, you know, prevent it from occurring rather than being reactive. We want to be proactive in the report of.
Okay.
I remember in the 90s when the term environmental terrorist was coined, when Earth Liberation Front was burning down big mansions, and then they became terrorists that were able to be prosecuted like international terrorists. How is a domestic terrorist defined, do you know?
So domestic terrorism, there's many definitions, but it's an overall of any terrorism that could occur within, bring terror within our country. So the incident in Buffalo, that's domestic terrorism. A school shooting could be considered domestic terrorism.
Yeah. Those are horrible things. I only ask because...
Homegrown.
Yeah. I only ask because sometimes activists are seen as bringing terror, but they're actually trying to make a point, and I want to make sure activists don't become considered terrorists.
This is really, we're looking at... incidents of where people shootings where people are murdered,
right.
Seriously injured.
Thank you.
All right. All in favor of Resolution 47?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? All right. Unanimous. Resolution 48, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services. This is a gun violence prevention grant, even though the word's not there. Motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second? Second. All right. Any discussion on this? All right. All in favor of Resolution 48?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Unanimous. Resolution 49, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 entered into the county for National Network for Safe Communities. Motion to discuss. Michelle, second. Do it. Any discussion? Yes?
I would just like to better understand what National Network for Safe Communities performs within this contract. The language obviously described their, like, kind of leadership, their guidance for our team, but I'm curious, like, what exactly are they guiding us on? What are they training?
Sure.
And that sort of thing.
So, National Network has been involved in this program since the beginning. All that time has been donated up to now. What they do is, one, they have the expertise in focused deterrence and domestic violence, and we have bi-weekly meetings with their group, and we have trainings with their group. And they're involved in monitoring all the statistics that come out of what we do. And so they're actually central to doing this properly. And it's, one of the good things is our program has shown dramatic decreases in domestic violence for the people that we do a focused deterrence approach to. And that we've been told by them, because they're nationwide, that we have one of the best statistical successes in the country. And so that's what they provide. And as I say, they are with us, monitor everything we say. There's input every 2 weeks. They show what we're doing. We give them all the statistics. We give them the facts. They actually support and help the people from our office who are doing it with guidance on each and every case that's going forward. We have different levels of this, right? We have D and C, B, and then the A level. And so the focus deterrence increases at every level, and they help guide us on that and what's successful and what isn't. So that's what they do. And honestly, they're very deserving of this money.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to, can you say more about what focus deterrence involves, like what actions it involves specifically? I want to drill down to really understand what the engagement points are with the community.
So as soon as a domestic incident report is filed, we now have KPD, we have NUPALS, we have Sargades, and every time a DIR is filed, they get a response from a police officer or from one of our investigators involved with the program. And they're told, one, that we are watching you. You know, we don't like, accept this kind of behavior in our county. Two, to the victims, if you need any assistance or support, even to the alleged perpetrators, if there's something we can do to help you change your behavior, we'll do it. And at each level that progresses, we give different notifications about that. At the B level, which is below the A is the most serious, the people that we don't think are learning their lessons and need to be treated more severely. At the B level, I actually go in, or Chief Tinty goes in, or Chief Sinagra goes in, and we meet personally with each one of these people, and I read them the Riot Act. That's my job. I say, look, I try and talk as human being to human being, but what you're doing is unacceptable in our community. You're hurting your family, you're hurting your kids, whatever it is, and if you continue to do this, we're going to treat you at the most severe level that we can. And that's part of the focus deterrence. You let them know you've got to stop. And if you don't stop and you get to this level, then unfortunately, the next time around, if we have the ability to put you and incarcerate you for a period of time, that's what's going to happen. So that's the process. That's what focused deterrence is. We see you. We're watching you. We're monitoring you. We know what you've done. You have to stop. We'll provide you any services or support you need, but you can't continue to do this. And that's why the programs work.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, National Network for Safe Communities is part of John Jay, who are the people who created this in the first place. And so it obviously serves them to collect the data because they're trying to promote their activities. Of the federal funding that we get, what percentage of it goes to them to collect the data that also serves them? And what percentage of that federal funding do we keep?
So the way this is structured is most of the money goes to local law enforcement. That's the way we structured it. Our office gets the right to hire at some point in time and a trauma-informed person to work with the program. That hasn't been done yet. We're still working on getting all of that done. Other than that, all the money's going to go to the law enforcement folks that are working with us to provide for overtime, for the extra work that they're doing. It is extra work, and we expect them to do the extra work. We want to provide them support for that. So the majority of this, you know, whatever it is, 70% of this is going to go to local law enforcement.
So is that really, like, it's a $800,000 grant?
It's a $500,000 grant.
Okay. And they get $100,000, and that's just to collect the data?
No, it's actually all the guidance that we're talking about, and all the review, and all of the work that they do to, yeah, honestly, every 2 weeks, there's a meeting that lasts 3 hours where everybody reviews all the cases that have come forward and decide on what the best approach is, and they help and support all of that work.
Okay.
I heard Michael Berg on Radio Kingston the other day talking about their domestic abuse shelters and how they have programs to help people get better over time.
Yeah.
That seems like good. Focused deterrence, because sometimes if you say you better get better or else, it's hard for them to access the help they need.
Well, so, you know, I'm well familiar with the domestic violence shelter. That is the people who've been victims of domestic violence. How do you approach the people who are committing those acts? How do you reach them? That's the issue.
Yeah.
How do you prevent them from continuing to do it? As I said, we offer support at each and every level. At each and every level, what do you need? Job training, you know, whatever it is, we will help you provide it. That's what we do. It's not until you've had gone through three levels and you've blown everybody off and you've committed crimes to multiple people, perhaps, and then we say you've crossed the line.
And then you're an A.
And then you're an A. And then if you come on our radar, you know, and we've already told you this, we've had a B notification where I've told him, or Chief Kendi has told him, or somebody else, next time around, we're going to treat you very severely. And that's the way it works. And that's what focused deterrence is. Can you get it inside their head that you're heading in the wrong direction, you're hurting the people you love, or the people that, you know, in your family, or the children, or whatever it is? How do you reach them? When we do this, is we also bring in community members. I mean, one of my favorite moments was we had a woman who was one of my wife's students who was unfortunately part of this program. I brought in my wife. She had a relationship with this person. We talked. She said, you know, try to reach her on a human level once again. We have that opportunity to do that in this program, and we try, right? We try. And the only other thing we have, by the way, is just to put people in jail. I'd rather do this and prevent it from happening then wait till they commit some heinous crime, and then we send them away forever. That's the process.
Thank you. Sure.
I will say that at each level, there's an action for the victim, too. It's not just for the offender. So there's a set of actions you do if it's a D, a C, a B. So it probably includes that program.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor of Resolution 49?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? All right. It's unanimous. Resolution 50, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to revise compensation of a current part-time investigator to a full-time investigator position. Motion to discuss. You should tell a second.
I'll second.
Fabiano. Discussion. Go for it.
I'm really confused about this. We just went through this in the budget, and I really thought that we had it all sorted out to upgrade the one part-time investigator to full-time. I appreciate the collaboration, you know, with your office. You know, I stood in front of my colleagues to say this is going to solve the problem. And so I was very surprised to see this month. So I'd love to learn more about it.
Sure. So this has arisen out of the move that my office has been forced into. Right? So as you know, and you saw our new digs. So initially, and up till a few weeks ago, we thought that we would have the ability to have a public-facing location within the courthouse. And within the courthouse, we have lots of security guards, everybody to check everything that goes on. It was not going to be a good solution, but the solution was to put it on the third floor of my office building, where we'd have to use an elevator and come into a small location where we were hoping to be able to put a receptionist. And of course, you needed guards, not guards, but some kind of glass protection and all that. As it turns out, Building and Ground says we can't do that. There's a combination of things. One, I've been told, is there's asbestos issues or whatever. The other is there's safety issues. So there's not enough space. If you come in on that elevator and there's some kind of emergency, there's no other exit that the person can reach. And so there were safety concerns, and there were building concerns. So what that means right now, and it's, I'm not happy with it, but it means that we're going to have the public service aspect of our office running out of 273 Wall Street. So that means you're going to have the public coming in to that. Now, what I've explained is, it's fine that we have, we can't entirely designate one investigator to sit in a chair or in a desk nearby the entrance to protect us. The one person who's there right now is also the IPVI investigator who goes out and has to serve subpoenas and talk to witnesses and do all that stuff. The other person that we're talking about, which is Eric Paulding, who's now in the part-time position, he's our accident reconstruction specialist. All of them are also subject to, if there's a murder or some kind of crisis out there in the community where they may be out all night long. So to only have one person that we have full time to serve that purpose can at times put us in jeopardy, right? We're not going to have one person who can sit there because the other person has to do the multiple other jobs that they're responsible for. So that's the issue. I think we need two full-time people, one of which will always be available to be there. That's why.
So is there, if I may?
Sure.
Is there, like, the workload, though? Because obviously these are not investigators. If we want a security guard, we can get a security guard. If these are, hold on, let me finish.
Yeah.
If we are upgrading an investigator, do they have a workload that warrants that? For their investigative work, aside from security, because everything you've listed so far is around security concerns. And by the way, we brought this up. Hey, what if they have to go out during the budget process? And we were told that this plan was going to work. So the buildings and ground stuff, and I'll just send this message to the executive's office, is incredibly frustrating to hear, you know, yet again another issue with this office, and it just gets worse and worse, honestly. And this is speaking for someone who stood up for this compromise, which I realized was not something that your office wanted, District Attorney Clegg. But so, can you speak to the workload of the investigator and why it makes sense to do this rather than hire a security guard?
Okay. Our investigators, and these two particularly, are involved in every major investigation that we have. Now, one is an accident reconstructionist, so he goes out. If you've got a bike accident or a car accident or something that might be criminal, he needs to go, and he needs to go immediately. He has to be there because evidence can be lost. So he's got that obligation. The other one is involved in our IPBI program, which, as you see, we deal with hundreds of people every year trying to work on that. And he's been working with the program the entire time. They also, and you know, right now, we're involved in two murder investigations in our office, and we have six different murder cases going on. And you know, preparation for all of that takes every ounce of everybody in my office to get done. I can promise you that there's not going to be any moment in time when they're sitting there, you know, checking their phone. It would help, right? If you know, they have some extra time. I will say that will help us deal with the workload that we have, which is over the top. But believe me, they're not going to be sitting there twiddling thumbs or playing games.
But can you speak to the second question,
yeah,
which sounds to me, if they're that busy, I don't know if that's who I'd want to have be the security officer. Why not just get a security officer who doesn't have to get pulled away or be working on so many other things?
If I'm betting, right? I'm betting. If you look into what it's going to cost to provide security, you need more than one officer, right? And what that's going to cost on a daily basis for this year, check it out. I'm just guessing. It's going to be three times what we're talking about right now.
Well, how is that possible when you just said that if this person went from part-time to full-time, it would serve your needs?
So the cost of that, whatever.
It makes it sound like you only need 20 more hours worth of security coverage.
What we need is somebody who can be there during office hours every day. If we have two people, we can do that.
Right, I understand, but we approved something already.
Yes.
So when you say you need this person from part-time to full-time, it tells me you're basically somehow short about 20 hours a week of security.
Well, the concern is, and it, you know, whether it's 20 hours or 5 hours or 10 hours, whatever it might be, when you have an investigator that has a major something that they have to do, and if they're also the only person that we set up, you know, we have the halftime position, but so there'll be some cooperation there. But if you have two full-time people, we believe we can make it work.
Go ahead.
What if they both get called out at the same time? It sounds like one works on partner violence, one works on murder cases. We have both in our community, and they don't take shifts.
Right.
Right.
It's going to take cooperation. Right. It's going to take us being very intelligent about how we schedule things, where they're going, what's going on.
You can't schedule a murder.
You can't schedule a murder. And, you know, it's possible that both of them will be out all night long, and one of them is going to have to bite the bullet and come in and work that day. And they do that.
I can.
So, I'll just, you know, I probably was the second most supportive person of this change. This feels very piecemeal. It feels very like trying to, you know, seeing a little hole and putting something over it and then finding another one. I mean, I feel way more comfortable to take a step back from this, assess what the actual security needs are, work on your own, work with the sheriffs, figure out like what is actually needed, recognizing that these two other human beings have complete other jobs that are not, like, it's not in their job description to be security guards. And it might be that should a move happen or some other thing, then those people still need to do what they're doing, and it sounds like they're very busy right now already. But I would feel more comfortable taking a step back, finding out what the changes are with Building Ground, looking at what the situation is, look what the actual security needs are, and figure out a solution for that instead of grabbing at these people who this was not what they were intended to do. That I would feel much better with that kind of solution myself. Go ahead.
I remember when we discussed it with your colleague for over 40 minutes, and the old solution sounded great, and I think you've created a good argument today. But you said you're guessing at the difference in security versus an investigator. Could we get a report on the difference?
If you'd like me to look into that, I can.
Or some, I'm not sure who.
Yeah. You're welcome to. I mean, I would feel way more comfortable to really take a look at this, understand the exact needs. how many hours of security is missing and is needed, what would it actually cost to do it instead of personally, and what the costs are, then this piecemeal, where I agree with legislator, you should tell, like, if both people are needed, then there's no security there. And, you know, but if there's an actual security guard, that's nothing's pulling that person from doing their job. And if it is serious, if it is that serious, we wouldn't want anything pulling the person who's supposed to be doing security from doing security.
Right. And which is why I'm asking to give us two full-time people.
Except that they both have other jobs.
They do, but we're able to coordinate that. I mean, as they say, the IPVI person has to go out, has to visit people, has to drop off letters, has to find victims, has to do that work. That isn't time sensitive in that there's an emergency. The murder cases, yes, everybody's involved in those cases. When they drop down, it still will require somebody to be present, and we can do that. We're thrust into this situation. I'm telling you the concerns of my office right now. We now have to bring the public into that space. That adds an extra level of security issues. If this is the amount of money that you're concerned about, that's up to you. I just think that right now, where we are, is what we need to do. And we're in. We're already in. We don't even have a lock for our door yet. But we're in. And so that's what we're managing. And I think that what I'm asking is reasonable. As we go forward, if we do some investigation, if you find that there's some security firm that can provide office hour security for this office for 40 plus hours a week, for less than what you're going to give this person, I would jump at that. It's impossible. And so I'm just saying, right now, where we are, this is something that just happened. We're trying to make the best of it, and that's why I'm here.
I'll just point out, if we were to go the route of the security, then the course of action, if we were going to take the fiscally driven course of action, would be not just to not do this, but to drop down the other investigator that we upgraded during the budget.
It's up to you.
Well, and the issue with all of this is, if you came to us and you said, you know, we have an epidemic of intimate partner violence, we need to increase the hours for the investigator so that we can keep up, like, that would concern me, right? I am very concerned with intimate partner violence in this community. If you came and said, we have an epidemic of murder, right? That would concern me. I'm very concerned about murder in this community. I've been concerned about both of those things, honestly, in the last few years, and we've had plenty of conversations about that. So I understand why it is attractive. It's attractive to me, of course, to enhance those investigative capacities while we're also solving another issue. My concern, based on the way this has all gone, is that we're not solving this issue. And I know that you're saying tonight that we are, but I've heard that before, and I'm just a little bit, you know, like the behavior that I'm learning in myself is changing, right? And it's, I'm becoming more skeptical of supporting these things, right? Like, my internal compass is starting to recalibrate based on the fact that we're getting another one of these things. So I'm really conflicted about whether to support this.
And I just want to point out that what you just said would also be helpful, right? So obviously, as I said, these people are going to work full time, no matter what, more than full time. If he gets full time, both we have the ability to schedule and to cover, and at the same time, and all those things are true. All those things are true. You know, certainly the level of murders that we've had is over the top in the history of this area, and so there's a lot of work involved in that. The more we can do, the better we can do.
Go ahead, Legislator Fabiano.
So my concern is, if we don't pass this tonight, what does he do in the meantime?
In that
short term, long term, looking at security guards, which I had said, and should have looked at the security guards from the beginning. and put security guards there, or a security guard. But now, time's run out. Are we going to start Monday with have no security there?
I can't feel pressure because of that, because I feel like this is something that should have been carefully thought about from the very beginning when we knew that this change was happening. But can I just take a minute, and I don't mean to put you in a weird position, Sheriff, but just to understand, like, what should a security guard be responsible for? What is there any parameters we have of the expectation of somebody who was serving in that role? Because what makes me uncomfortable is this idea that this person has other work they're going to even be doing while they're sitting there. And so, I mean, do we have guidelines of what we expect from a security guard, what their attention? I mean, I've never seen anyone downstairs working on anything else while they're down there. Again, it's not a for or against this situation, but just to help us understand what a security guard is expected during that role.
So the security guard, first of all, has to have a state license to be a security guard. So he has to get it from the New York State Department, a certified security guard. That training entails, I think it's like 3 weeks of training, and there's always a security assessment that's done in any of our buildings, any of our county buildings. So we would do a, and we do one annually, including this building. Security guard is responsible for walking and checking the hallways. Well, you may not see him do that. That's their requirement, and depending on how many of them. They also are required to look at those cameras. As we know, they check IDs. We just had something that came up the other day, sorry. But we did. And they're responsible for the security of the building. There was what we thought was a fire, and it wasn't. It was an elevator
bell.
Belt that was burning, and we evacuated the building. So they're responsible for the proper evacuation of the building. So there are several things that the security guard is responsible for, and it's a liability if you don't have someone in place to do that. So each floor, for example, has a fire marshal or a person responsible to get everybody out if it's more than one floor, or the security guard can be responsible for that.
And just a second question, if speaking to Legislator Fabiano's concern, if we needed for like a month or so some support from your office to help assure some security there just to get us to the next stage, just to assure they're safe for now until a security guard or we can figure out what the right path is. Is your office at all able to assist for a short time?
Madam Chair, we are shorthanded and okay. We can't even hire people. So we're shorthanded right now.
Okay.
And we're in the process of finding people to take these jobs. I think a lot of us are going through that, trying to hire folks to do these type of jobs. We're pretty tight. There's supposed to be a gun in the building at all times, and sometimes we can't even do that.
Okay.
So we have to depend on our security guards. We covered this building, DSS, the Department of Health.
Okay, I appreciate it. It was just an ask, but it just sort of... Okay, go ahead.
I just think at this point, I think we would be foolish not to support this and then go on in like a Jeopardy type of thing. That's my feeling. They can look at this next budget time or whatever, but he's got to have somebody there.
Go ahead. I agree that I think if the district attorney is asking for this, that there is a need, and... time is of the essence, and that's the thing that, yeah, we can put this out for a while and look at other options, but if something happens in 2 weeks, then what? Like you
then
said,
the
public comes
on a hook.
In,
big hook.
In your new setup, so I think we need to look at it going forward. However, I think that we need to keep our residents and beyond safe, so that's my thought.
I just wanted to say, I don't think we're trying to save money through this conversation. We're trying to do what's best for your department.
Exactly.
And so I think a comparison of a security officer and an investigator would help us a lot, not only what they do, but how much they cost. I'm not trying to put work on your plate. Maybe the legislative department can help in some way. I'm just not sure.
Okay.
I'm happy to do that.
And I think, legislator, you should tell me at a great point. We're trying to address these issues and be serious about them, and we want to be supportive.
Well, and please, I hope I whatever responses I had, it wasn't meant to say anything, but I think this is the best thing to do at this moment in time, and I think that it serves all the purposes that we have urgently right now.
Legislator, you should tell.
So, you know, just speaking for myself, I will support this tonight, but I don't think we should wait until the budget to address this.
Okay,
I don't
that's
think
fine.
This space is good at all. It just gets worse and worse, and I want to get you guys out of that space if we can and into something more permanent. I know that we're waiting on a space needs assessment from the county executive's office, and I'm very eager for that for a variety of reasons, including the space at the jail that we want to look at improving and everything else. So, you know, that's my long-term commitment is to help be part of getting this bigger picture solved.
Right.
That's the goal. So that's what I got to say.
And I'll just say that I absolutely 100% agree in the importance of making sure that everyone is safe. I don't agree this is the way. I'm very concerned about this being the way. If you had had here a full-time security guard, I would have felt very different, because it is not about the money at all. I don't think this is the right solution. I'm very worried that this does not keep the people safe, because these people both have other jobs. And so I'm not going to vote for it, but not because I don't want a solution for you. It's because I don't think this is your best solution. And so I just... Again, if this was different, if this was a security guard and it was more money, I would have been 100% behind it. But I just don't feel like these are the two people who should be doing this. If it's that serious, these shouldn't be the ones who are doing it. So,
and if I could just say, I agree that in the long term, this isn't the right place. This isn't the right way to do this. There's nothing more than we could ask for than to have one location with our entire office there,
right,
and protected with security guards or whatever. I mean, as you know, this was dropped down to us with a month's notice.
Yep.
And it keeps changing. And so we're dealing with
and I think
changes.
We need a solution, and nothing personal, but there should be a deputy executive here for this issue. And so
I'm here because of illness. That's
no, I'm fine. I'm not. I'm saying that this, you know, this is a big issue that came up and that needs to be solved. And so we do need the deputy executive here to with real solutions for you, because I do want everything to work out. So anyway, let's just vote on this. So all in favor of resolution number 50, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'm opposed. Motion passes. Resolution 51, authorizing the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract amendment with New York State Office of Indigent Legal Services. Motion to discuss.
Motion.
Second. Second. Discussion. I'll just reiterate that, to if you could just send it over to Deputy Executive Kelly, that I have come to believe strongly that some of our cap can be covered by ILS. Some of our cap costs, so I'm really waiting for someone to reach out to them and identify what, if anything, that they would cover, because I know they cover it in other counties, or elements of it. Okay, all in favor of Resolution 51?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? So moved. Resolution 74, adopting a proposed local law number 11, local law amending chapter 166 of the Code of Ulster County, providing for the administration and enforcement of the New York Uniform Fire Prevention and Building Code. Motion to discuss. Second.
Second.
Discussion. Legislator, you should tell, didn't we already?
Yep. So it's a local law. So we did the hearing.
Okay.
Then we had the hearing.
Thank you.
Now we've got to pass the law.
Thank you. Okay. I'm like, this is really like deja vu all over again.
It's true.
All right. So I imagine, is there any more discussion on this?
No, no, and I'll just, while I've got the floor, I'll just give a shout out to Legislator Corcoran, who helped a lot with his considerable prowess in the building and safety and inspection world, and he really helped me wrap my mind around this when I was trying to sort this out last year, so kudos to him, and I feel good about passing this forward.
Great. Okay, anything else? All in favor of Resolution 74?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstained? Unanimous. All right. We have new business. So the only thing I want to do, I won't take too much time, but, you know, I have been thinking about what we might want to accomplish in this whole year. I know I have my own wish list, which I'll just put out very quickly, and then others I'm hoping you'll think about kind of the any kind of elements in this committee that you might want to see. So for me, I'd like to really see a refined restorative justice plan. I know there was a lot of work. This goes to the two of you at the end, Valerie and the DA, of just, you know, I know there was that whole goal of setting out a real set policy as to which situations should get deferred and which ones shouldn't and where that's at and where it's going. So I would love to for us to learn and grow and maybe even move forward in that in the next 12 months. For the sheriff, I would like us to be exploring more the idea of being able to do some training, food-related preparing training in our kitchen for people who are incarcerated, perhaps. Any outdoor opportunities that could possibly exist, perhaps, and really the big thing that's driving me crazy is that reentry program, which should have been highly active by now, and so really wanting to understand what's going on that's not in place since we've already kind of approved that, and not for now, but just there. And then EMS, you know, I know that there are efforts towards efficiency studies, and I want us to sort of stay abreast of those processes. I know that there have been EMS studies of efficiencies in other counties, such as Sullivan County, and really figure out with this group what kinds of changes we could make to really assure that the EMS system in Ulster County is as refined as it can possibly be. And so look forward to sort of more conversations related to that. Anyone else have any wish lists for this year? Do you have any remaining ones? Oh, go ahead. You start.
I started actually last August working on this, and then there was a change in regime and people that had left. So Veterans Court is something that I really want to work on. Hopefully it's going to happen.
Great.
So
I'll get that on the list.
Yes.
And
I mean, I'll say, you know, the space for all of our various agencies is a huge, you know, is a huge thing. The outdoor space for the jail, as you mentioned, what we've already talked about with the district attorney. I'm very, very eager to see what develops with the extra manpower that we're putting behind the ambulance, the EMS. So through the budget amendment,
the two fly cars.
Yeah, exactly, those fly cars. So I really want to see how that develops. I, you know, have said this in the past, and I'll say it again. I'm very, 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 very concerned about the future of our largest provider of the private provider for EMS services, Mobile Life Support Services. Just their billing practices and what they're going to have to do financially in order to address the issues with their billing, I believe is going to potentially put them on really shaky ground. And, you know, if we lost them as a provider, that'd be very concerning. So EMS is a huge, huge priority. And I think it has the potential to become our biggest issue really, really quickly should something change in that dynamic.
Yes.
I think right off the bat, after tonight's meeting, our top priority should be getting the DA's yep. office in their own space. I have friends that work at the DA's office. It's a very, very huge operation. They need to be in a place, you know, kind of isolated by themselves with no interruptions. It's a big agency in this county, and I think that we should focus with us and the county executive's office to move quickly and try to get these people in their own space.
Thank you. That's good. Thank you for getting that down there.
I would like to get behind your effort to change the yard. I think it's really sad that people don't have access to soil and grass, and maybe even before the yard changes, we can get soil in there with a gardening program that can help with training. There's soil science, pruning, planting, all these things that can help post-prison.
And then just also, Dick, hopefully this is the year that we're going to have the CAP court.
I'd like to give you an update.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you.
So, police programs, but they're the ones that are, we bought the materials. It was bought out of our operational budget, the sheriff's operational budget. I had contacted and been in contact with the county exec's office, Chris Kelly in particular, and, you know, we had made actually we had a tentative agreement that Buildings and Grounds was going to pick up the fencing for our lot. That was moved because they knocked down the old jail, and that's where our impound lot was. So we put a new impound lot behind the jail, and we're still waiting for the fence. We're waiting on the blueprints. The contract's been signed, so we're waiting on the blueprints from the company that I guess the architecture company that put it together. For whatever reason, when I asked, and it's going to be built in house from our maintenance folks, when I asked the maintenance guy, he's saying June. I'm like, but if you have everything, why are we waiting
June?
Until June?
All right.
So,
we'll follow up.
I'd like to get some follow up on that for the CAP court. It's not going to take that long to build. And we'll, Mr. Delahunt from OCA is waiting for the blueprints.
Right.
He did the walkthrough, the judges did the walkthrough. And we're just waiting to build, and that's something that I can't control.
So to we really want to have the updates with the blueprints and have that move along, and updates on the reentry, and to know that we're going to want a specific conversation about the DA space at the next meeting. And the other things I'm not forgetting, but I think it sounds like those are the highest on the list. That's a question you ask them, but it's in terms of, like, definitely need to talk about before or by next meeting.
Can Madam Chair, an update on current events?
Sure.
We had a forum last night. It was interesting. I think people needed the vent, and that's okay. Ironically and unknown, that there was a decision that was made today by the county court where the main charge of murder second was dismissed. One of the things that was brought up yesterday is why the sheriff doesn't make comments on cases, and he can make a comment on a case in the state of Tennessee. Well, that's because I'm not from Tennessee. I have no ties there. Here as a sheriff, I cannot have an opinion when someone is in the jail, and I was the respondent in this particular case, and he's held at our jail, and our folks may be testifying with the Attorney General's office in regards to this case. So we have influence as elected officials. People voted for us, and I think it's important that we refrain from making comments on an ongoing judicial process, because it interferes with the court system of being fair. And what happens is that the defense can say that they're not getting a fair trial because folks like myself are making comments about it. And the witnesses haven't testified. There have been no jurors that were picked, if there are going to be jurors. And I think we have to be mindful of that in the process and the criminal justice system that we have.
Can you just share with us what, and I think I asked this before, what grounds he threw the case at?
I know it was that today was a decision that was made on a motion to dismiss by the defense. I have no other.
Do you know what grounds it was?
Yeah, I just looked at what was in the Freeman.
Oh.
Same here. He dropped the murder second. He dropped the reckless endangerment first. It's about, the issue is depraved indifference to human life. That's a standard on the murder second charge. It's also the standard on reckless first. For whatever reason, the judge decided that that was not provable, apparently. But I can't speak to it either. We're not
right. No, just asking
it,
for.
But I think that's the charges that were dropped involved that issue.
Okay, thank you.
So with that said, we have had a meeting with other law enforcement officials in the anticipation of civil unrest in the county, and in particular from folks on the chartering buses from New York City, because the family was from New York City, and it happened on a New York State thruway. So that's what we're bracing for, and we haven't seen anything yet, but anything's a possibility.
Thank you, Sheriff.
I just want to say that I believe the Veterans Court is happening. I was in county court last week, and the judge asked for an assignment from my office, which we
good,
did.
Good, I'm glad.
An assignment from the public defender's office, which has been made. So I think that's in process.
Great. Well, see, one more thing. We'll just cross that one off the list.
Yeah.
No, we'll confirm before we cross anything off the list. Did you want
to
say?
Go ahead. I just wanted to. I know you were asking about the EMS study. We have a contract with CPSM to do a study for the county. And we are meeting with CPSM on the 8th to do the kickoff.
Great.
So that is underway.
It's in the timeline? Like, when did...
So, I would say before June. My hope is to have it 100% complete. The investment of the budget amendment will work in parallel to the study. So, I don't want to put the cart before the horse and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. These carts are going to be positioned here. While we're still collecting a lot of data, I want to work with the consultant while they collect their information and work with them while we do this.
To figure out where the best place is. Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
And I do have a plan to provide a monthly report at the direction of Chris Kelly to you with EMS data, with crews unable to assemble, and some statistical information and stuff like that. So. I already started putting it together, and I'll have it for you next
Terrific.
Month.
Thank you. Okay, motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second, whatever.
He's doing it all. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good meeting.
Yeah,
good meeting.
Much better than with that other chair. No, I'm just kidding.
that's what they told me last time.
More power to you. Sorry.
No, just Chris has
been
from this meeting. He's always.
Yeah. And I told him about that.
Yeah.
He's great.
So,
yeah. And everything I said, I've already told him.
Yeah.
So he knows. He wanted all.
I read about it.
He wanted an adoption.
I said,
what did he say? He adopted what?
So the state. It's. I'll give you that number right there. So it's. The state property tax
overall,
law.
Though, it was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I have
466.
Okay.
I know the
okay.
I have,
so
I
that's
at
the state, but apparently for any local person to get that tax exemption that's already been approved by the state, each municipality and school has to also approve it. So we approved it, but it's still like the New Paltz Town firefighters can't get the state one unless their town approves it. So in other words, there's no point in having the state have the law if nobody can use it unless they... But yeah, so to know which municipalities have adopted that or have a plan to adopt it, which school districts have adopted it and have a plan to adopt it.
Okay.
Can you also let them know that, can you let the new administration know that we can hear them through the door during the committee meetings if they're having too fun of a time after 5 o'clock?
No.
It happened last night too.